Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you the sort of person who likes to take risks in life, or do you prefer to take out insurance policies instead? Today's guest admits he's addicted to insurance.
So it dawned on me recently, having a look through my monthly budgets, that me and my partner have a number of insurance policies that, when you add it all up, adds up to a reasonable chunk of the budget.
We're talking £50, hundreds of pounds, more than that?
More than hundreds of pounds.
More than hundreds of pounds each?
Correct.
In fact, 31-year-old Joss has been spending thousands of pounds a year on overlapping insurance policies, protecting him and his partner from every eventuality. If the worst happens, he doesn't want to run the risk of being underinsured, but what about the costs of being overinsured? Welcome to Money Clinic, the weekly podcast about personal finance and investing from the Financial Times. I'm Claire Barrett, the FT's consumer editor. On Money Clinic, we typically approach risk from the point of view of investing. But today, we're going to look at it through the lens of insurance. Today's guest is happy to pay to protect himself from the prospect of financial disaster.
I'm Joss. I am 31. I work as an engineer. My partner is a chiropractor. We recently bought our first house.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My whole life I've enjoyed mountain biking and skiing, and I enjoy speed, and I certainly don't wrap my life in cotton wool. I have had accidents, but I would say, being an engineer, I'm very analytical. And I think that's maybe why I've put maybe too much thought into insurances.
If it was possible to buy insurance for it, you could bet that Joss had a policy.
Buildings insurance, contents away from home insurance.
He even had a policy for boiler cover.
Car insurance, travel insurance, life insurance, critical illness insurance.
Okay.
And I think that covers it.
And have you ever had to make a claim on any of these insurance policies?
Well, I have on windscreens on my car, but that's it. There's a lot of insurances and really not very many claims.
So how much was all of this costing Joss and his partner? You probably won't be surprised to learn that Joss is a spreadsheet guy. And I challenged him to tot up the monthly cost of all of these insurance policies.
Oof, I actually haven't added that up. That was something I was hoping to do before I came on the podcast, actually, but I didn't get round to doing it.
Well, Joss came back to us, and it turned out the couple had been spending nearly £240 a month on insurance for their home, car, boiler, travel, and medical cover. That's nearly £3,000 per year. Joss looked down the list of all of the different policies that he and his partner had taken out, and the most expensive were the life cover and critical illness policies that had been sold to them by their mortgage broker when they bought their house 3 years ago.
We were sold essentially two life insurance policies each. So one covered half of the mortgage.
This is something that's often called term insurance. So if the worst were to happen to one of you, then like your half of the mortgage would be paid off.
Yeah. So then the second half of the policy was again, a life insurance to cover another half of the mortgage. Right. This was advised to us. And then critical illness was lumped together with that second policy. And we are young and we eat healthily and we exercise every day. And it sort of felt overkill.
But nevertheless, you felt quite pressured to sign up for it at a stressful time when you were trying to buy a
house. Did, yeah. It was our first house and you're dealing with all the paperwork. And it felt like something that wasn't worth arguing about.
How did they explain critical illness to you? What did you understand that insurance to cover?
Essentially what it says on the tin, he kind of explained that if one of us were to get ill and we were no longer able to work and the other partner had to care, he said that he'd seen on multiple occasions how this insurance has helped people out of difficult situations.
Mm.
So it felt a little bit fear-mongering in a way.
Mm.
And it actually transpired when we were looking at changing the life insurance that the mortgage broker earned £1,000 commission per policy. So by selling us two policies each, that's £4,000 of commission.
Right. And was that made clear to you at the time?
No.
One of the questions Joss wants to put to the podcast experts is whether this would count as mis-selling, and if so, whether he could obtain any redress for this. He's since cancelled his two policies. As it turns out, he already had life insurance and income protection cover as part of his workplace pension arrangements. A quick primer, if you've not heard of all of these terms before. Life insurance pays out a lump sum to your dependents if you die. Critical illness insurance pays out a lump sum if you get a life-changing illness, for example, cancer or having a stroke. And many critical illness policies also include an element of income protection, which guarantees you a certain level of income for a certain period of time if you cannot work and earn money. Often, companies will offer their employees life cover and other insurance benefits as part of their package alongside the company pension. So this is a salutary reminder for all of our listeners to check with HR first before buying any more cover. But Joss and his partner are still out of pocket for insurance that they never needed.
And that worked out to be £140 a month, which it doesn't seem like a big number, but it took us about 2.5 years to get our act together. And if you were to be putting that money into stocks and shares, ISA, tracker fund, it does seem like quite a lot of money.
You can't beat yourself up for making a financial mistake, but you can learn from it and move on.
I was on a fancier work scheme car, and that insurance was costing me £700 a year. And I went for a premium level insurance on that because I have to return the car with no chips on the windscreen, and that came with zero excess on the windscreen cover. So, and the other perk of that was the foreign hire car.
Oh, yeah.
That insurance supposedly covered the excess on the hire cars. I do travel fairly regularly, and I thought it would be nice to be able to say, no, I'm already covered with my own car insurance. However, I later found out that it covered hire cars in the UK, but not foreign use. And I never hire a car in the UK. So again, I have reduced the size of my car, and I've also reduced my insurance to about £350 a year.
No way. So that's like half.
By going to a regular cover, yeah. So I have been on a bit of a insurance mission lately.
In total, cutting back his level of cover has saved Joss and his partner nearly £100 per month. But now he's worried this could be a cut too far. Here are his questions for the experts.
I would like to know which policies are compulsory, which policies are worth having, and what level of cover is worth having. And if that's not clear cut, if there are any rules of thumb or guidance that you can use to make your own decisions.
Okay. What else would you like to know?
I'd also like to know, is there a way to get impartial advice without a commission looming in the background?
And anything else you'd like to put to the experts?
Yes. Is there any way of knowing if your insurance policies are overlapping?
Our first expert is a voice you will probably recognise. Dean Dunham is the barrister and consumer finance black belt who presents the popular Friday night Consumer Hour show on LBC Radio. Dean, welcome to Money Clinic.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be on with you.
Well, likewise. I'm really excited to hear what you have to say about the world of insurance because it's an increasingly topical subject of conversation during the cost of living crisis. Insurance premiums are going up. Do you get many people calling up to complain about this on LBC?
It's one of the most common subject areas I have. And you probably know insurance providers don't like me because I'm always knocking them because there's a huge amount of consumer detriment, in my view, when it comes to insurance selling. Too many people are sold policies they shouldn't have or don't understand. So, Claire, in short, yes, the answer is lots of people get in contact with me about problems with insurance providers.
Well, you've heard about Joss's experiences, in particular being persuaded to take out insurance cover by a mortgage broker. Now, on the one hand, that could be a sensible thing to consider. On the other hand, Joss feels like he was coerced into paying far too much.
Yeah. Insurance providers must be careful. Whenever you sell anything to a consumer, you must do so in a transparent manner. That consumer must understand fully what they're getting into. And if we look at Joss's situation, it appears to me that that was not the case. He didn't really understand that perhaps there was going to be a commission paid to a broker. That should have been made very clear. Didn't really understand that perhaps he had this cover elsewhere. So now he's almost overinsured. So this looks like a case where potentially these policies were missold to him.
Now, obviously, nearly 3 years has passed since Joss took out those policies, and he's since cancelled part of the cover to save money. So, I mean, in situations like this, Dean, do you think it's too late to bring a complaint?
Well, it's not too late. Of course, it's always best to jump on these things quickly, but I wouldn't say it's too late, but certainly he's got to take action very swiftly now.
And he would do that by complaining in writing to the mortgage broker who he bought the policy from, setting out why he's not happy, that he didn't know about the commission, those kinds of things. And then if they can't resolve it, then he could take it to the financial ombudsman?
Correct. I mean, and it's important that he does go to them first. They will be concerned when they have a customer saying, I was not aware about this commission, because they will know that is one of the grounds which the courts time and time again have said, that is a red flag for mis-selling. So he's just got to lay out the timetable, the chronology of events, and really all the things that were said and perhaps not said during the sales process.
Now, I'm someone who's bought critical illness cover myself in the past, and I did so through my financial advisor. And the first thing he said to me was, find out what cover you've got through your contract of employment with the Financial Times. And I went off and found out that actually I did have quite a bit of cover that I didn't know about. And so he tailored the policy to start from where that ended, which cost me significantly less in terms of the premium per month. And he disclosed up front that he would be getting a commission and what that would be. So I was happy with that process, but my kind of rule of thumb with these things is never buy the insurance that another company is offering you as an add-on. Maybe best to go to somebody independent. And you could apply that to like travel insurance when you're being flashed up flights and holiday deals online, or car insurance being upsold by a hire rental company. In all of these cases, if you get the insurance yourself independently, it's almost always cheaper and probably better cover too.
Absolutely correct. Because remember that a third party that's trying to sell you this, they're doing it because they make money from it. If you go to someone who's not connected and you say to them, will you be getting commission from this if I go forward? And they say no, then you know that's impartial advice. Claire, there are so many people that are overinsured because they've got more than one policy covering the same thing. And that means they're spending more of their hard-earned cash than they should be.
Dean, what would your advice be for people who are listening, who are thinking, maybe I do have overlapping cover and I could be saving money? What are the things that they should be doing to check this out?
Well, the first thing is the obvious, which is to basically line up all the insurance policies that you have. And remember, you may have some you're not necessarily aware of, like package bank accounts. Your home insurance may cover you for more than you realize. So unfortunately, it is a bit of reading. It's going, looking at the policies you've got, or perhaps calling them and saying, can you tell me what am I covered for? And importantly, what am I not covered for? I guarantee many, many people are going to find they are overinsured and they can start cutting some policies. But also the other thing that I tell people is not just enough having an insurance policy. You have to understand the policy. And importantly, you have to understand, what does it not cover? What are the exceptions? Claire, that's the subject that most people call me about. They had a policy, but they just weren't covered.
Give us some examples of that.
Well, it's things like travel insurance, where someone's gone on holiday, they had a pre-existing health issue, they got ill on holiday, and then travel insurance company says, well, actually, you knew that you had that health issue before. It's an underlying issue. Therefore, you're not covered. Go and have a look at this clause in our policy. Or home insurance, where often people say to me, we were burgled and the insurance companies told us we're not covered because we didn't declare that we had 3 laptops in the house or some expensive jewelry. Most policies have these exclusions, these exceptions. I will say this, insurance providers must make it very clear to you at the point they sell you the policy, what's included and what's not. Because under the Consumer Rights Act, which is the applicable law, we call that a key term. Many don't do that. And if you go back and fight that, often they'll cave in, or the financial ombudsman will say, well, actually, Mr. Insurer, you didn't tell Mr. Smith about the exception or the exclusion. So that term in your terms and condition is not binding.
Mm. So this is why you get all of those funny questions from insurance providers when you're trying to get a quote for cover, like, does your house have a swimming pool? Or is it a Grade 2 listed building? And you think, who do you think I am? Now, the financial regulator, the Financial Conduct Authority, they're taking a very keen interest in the insurance market at the moment. Why do you think that is, Dean?
Well, I think it stems from what we've just been saying, because they realise there's lots of mis-selling going on. People are being sold policies that they do not need and in some cases cannot afford. They realise this is an area of consumer detriment, and that's why they're looking at it. They're not doing enough, in my view. And it's come way too late. They should have done this a long time ago. One of the interesting things is when you ask the FCA, so what's the plan? Why are you actually looking at it? And what's the outcome? They won't give you the answer, which is, I find, very extraordinary, to be honest, because it's an area where we need them to wade in. We think they are, but we don't know why.
Well, some great points there, Dean, which we will feed back to Joss. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
I feel we got our money's worth.
Well, that's always good. I didn't missell you anything.
Next, I turn to Sam Richardson. He's the deputy editor of Which Money, the magazine and website of the Consumer Campaign Group. How would you say, Sam, that customers, people who are reading the Which Money magazine, what are the areas where they could be saving money?
So, the biggest insurance types where the biggest savings can be made, car insurance, most of all, but home insurance also, very big expense. Most people can't avoid. Of course, it starts with comparison. Most of us now are so used to using comparison sites, but it's about using more than one because they've got different panels of insurers who may look at you in different ways. Then also looking at other areas where you can tweak your quote, such as the excess. Could you increase that? Are there add-ons you don't need, types of cover that you don't need? And once you've got those and you've got some quotes, you can go back to your current provider and be like, look, this is what your competitors are offering me. Can you do me a better price? And actually, there's quite a high success rate for haggling. Although it's a bit awkward, we really encourage people to pick up the phone.
And just talk us through some of the terms that you mentioned there, like the excess on a policy. I mean, that's something that people might not immediately be aware of what it actually means, but it's one way of getting a much cheaper quote.
Of course. So when you make a claim, the excess is amount of money that you have to pay. If you make a claim for £500 and your excess is £100, you'll only get £400 from your insurer because the £100 has been subtracted from it. So excess is something that has to be treated with care. Yes, raising your excess, so saying I'll pay £200 rather than £100, will save you money on the premium, but it could come to the point where it's not worth you claiming, which raises the question, is it worth being insured at all? So we recommend with excesses, think about what you could actually afford to claim. Say if it's your car insurance, could you actually afford a £200 excess? Or would that realistically stop you getting your car repaired and drive you off the road? In which case, would advise keep the excess low, find other ways to reduce the premium.
Why would you say, Sam, that it's so important for people to shop around? Because I've just had to shop around for my home insurance. It did save me £75, but it did take out an afternoon of my weekend. I think the faff to fun ratio, is how one of my colleagues put it recently, is not great.
Of course, it's not the best job in the world at all. What I would say is that different insurers see customers in very different ways, because they may treat customers who live in your area, of your age, in your type of house, as particularly risky, whereas another insurer might think, actually, they're not that risky. I can offer them a lower premium. I'd say this is particularly true if you are seen as complicated by insurers. So you could have a pre-existing medical condition and be looking to get travel insurance, or you could have a very unique house. We've dealt with people who've had heritage listed houses or thatched roofs and have had a nightmare getting insurance. Those customers have even more to gain by shopping around. But I would say it's worth going through that process of entering your details into a comparison site. You know, the savings could be very impressive. You don't know until you try.
One of the biggest problems that Joss has experienced, but I'm sure is common to other listeners, is this duplication of cover. Is that something that bothers Witch?
Yes. So in cases like Joss's, what he might find, as well as the costs of having all these insurance policies, is that when he comes to claim, the insurers will dispute between themselves who should actually pay up. This is called contribution clauses. If two insurers both cover the same event, you don't get double the payout, sadly. Instead, the insurers will agree to divide the claim. So you only have to claim once, but it can mean that the time spent to process the claim is a lot longer by insurers.
There are some types of insurance that you absolutely have to have. You can't drive a car without having motor insurance. In many cases, you can't get a mortgage unless you've got buildings insurance. But then when it comes to life insurance, that sounds a little bit more optional. Is it something you think a young, fit, healthy couple like Joss and his partner really need to be thinking about?
Life insurance is most important when you have financial dependence. So for a couple without kids, if the other partner is earning, I would say that life insurance is perhaps not essential. Because say the worst happened to one partner, the other partner will hopefully be able to, say, cover the costs of the mortgage, or at least prepare to sell the property so they're not facing those mortgage costs. Where life insurance is more useful, yeah, if you've got kids, if you've got a partner who's not working, then it's worth looking into.
Yes, as you say, it very much depends on your circumstances and asking that what if. What if one of us died? What would we do? Could we afford to keep the house? It's a situation that I'm sure has proved catastrophic for people in the past for the sake of a premium of not very much.
Yeah, it may be that you realise in that conversation, you know, we have savings to deal with that sort of eventuality, in which case maybe insurance is not useful just yet. Of course, it's a horrendous conversation to have, but it's worth doing. It'll only take 2 minutes and save, you know, a lot of stress potentially further down the line.
Are there any other tips, Sam, that you would give to listeners who are eager to be prepared for the worst but not overpay for it?
So start by seeing the cover that you have and ask yourself, when did I last change provider for that cover? If you've been with the same insurer for a few years, you might think, you know, I'll get treated better as a loyal customer. But in reality, it doesn't mean you're getting the best deal. So there are new rules that are designed to protect loyal customers from paying more than they would as a new customer. It doesn't mean that your insurance won't go up each year. The insurer is still allowed to raise your price if their costs have gone up or if they're seeing you as riskier. So we'd really recommend each year looking at your insurances, be like, do I still need all of those? Do I know how much this could be costing me if I switch? That little bit of life admin, yes, it's a little bit of a faff, but can really pay off.
Yeah, particularly if something does go wrong and you've got the right cover, then you will not regret spending that afternoon sorting all of this out. Well, thanks ever so much, Sam. It's great to have you on the show. Where can people go on the Which website to find more about your advice on picking insurers?
So it'd be which.co.uk/insurance.
Excellent. We'll put a link to that in the show notes too. Well, very useful information for Joss there from our experts, which we've passed on to him, and we'll let you know if his complaint about mis-selling progresses. But hopefully lots of useful tips there for all listeners out there. Compare the costs of insurance, prepare to haggle with your existing provider, read the small print, and always think twice before buying insurance as an adult. That's it for Money Clinic with me, Claire Barrett, this week, and we hope you like what you've heard. If you did, spread the word and leave us a review. We're always looking to chat with people about their money issues for the show, so if you're interested in being part of a future episode and are looking for some expert advice, then email us, our address, money@ft.com. You could also take a peek at our website, ft.com/money, grab a copy of the FT Weekend newspaper, or follow me on Instagram. I'm @ClaireB. Money Clinic was produced in London by Persis Love and Lawrence Knight. Our sound engineer is Breen Turner, and our editor is Manuela Saragosa. You heard original tunes this week by Metaphor Music. And finally, our usual disclaimer, the Money Clinic podcast is a general discussion around financial topics and does not constitute an investment recommendation or individual financial advice. For that, you'll need to find an independent financial advisor. That's all the small print for now. We'll see you back here next week. Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.